Now in studio with me is Kate Lawler from Potential Achieved. Good morning, Kate. How are you?
Morning, Michael. I'm great. Thanks very much. How are you doing?
I'm brilliant. And the Dubs are just about to get back out.
We're ready. We're ready.
Ready to take the drive for five has started. I know Leinster faltered, but...
This weekend we'll do it for them. It's all right. We're all right.
The real blues. The real blues are getting out there. Kate... Before we get started on Potential Achieved, maybe tell us a little about yourself.
I'm a Dub, as you can hear from me and some of the conversation. I'm the seventh of eight, which means that I suppose we always had to make sure that I kept up with the rest of the family. And I was very lucky in that we were always encouraged to be the best that we could be, to push a bit forward and go literally the extra mile. My parents were in business, and so I suppose I've followed suit. My experience ranges from working in PJ Carroll's within sort of a manufacturing background, all the way through to project management, to occupational psychology, to doing what I'm doing now, which is encouraging people again to be the best that they can be.
Now let's talk about Potential Achieved. What is it?
Well, what we do in Potential Achieved is we ask questions. That's really the key. And what we do is we encourage people to realise that they can either work or play or have experiences beyond what they're currently doing. And I see potential in a way as steps and stairs, not a ladder. Oftentimes people think about a ladder up against a wall and whether it's against the correct wall. You've all of those debates. I see potential much more as steps and stairs, and that we reach a stage, a landing almost, and we become comfortable there, gain new experiences there, and then we're ready. So that's sort of a potential achieved at one level. And then once we have gained those experiences, we're ready to go to the next step, if you like, and reach the next landing. And it doesn't make any difference whether it's sport, whether it is a hobby, whether it's work, whether it's your home life. It really doesn't, there are no barriers, I suppose, to reaching your full potential. And I think that's the key to what we do within the organisation.
Yeah, well, when you started off there, the first thing that I was thinking about was sports psychology.
Yes.
And this is sports psychology for life.
Yes.
And maybe I'll talk to you later about that. How can I improve my golf game?
Okay.
But we leave that. We can't be always talking about me. So when I heard first about Potential Achieved, the first thing that came into my mind was senior management.
Yes.
And you're telling me that's not what it's about.
It can be. But I think that there is a sense that you can achieve your potential no matter what. As I was driving here today, I was looking at young parents with their children. And I was thinking about how we learn to walk. And we do. Everybody learns to walk, unless there is an absolute reason that stops us doing it, clinical, medical, whatever. But everybody learns to walk. And it's exactly that. It's we start, we fall down, we get up and go again. So again, it doesn't make it isn't necessarily that it's for senior management. Now, what does happen at senior management is that it gets more and more lonely when you're there. And I suppose there is a sense that you're working through and with other people. But it is, no matter if you're at home and you are a good knitter, and I use this all the time, and I use this with people as an example. If you're if you can knit, you can knit amazing things. All you need to learn are the basics to begin with. And then comes the confidence. And it is the confidence, really, to take the chance, to fall down, to make the mistake. And my sense and my experience says that fear sometimes stops people falling down, because they think, if I fall, I'll never get up again. And it, whereas if I'm really thinking about, actually, I'm going to take a bit of a risk here. It doesn't have to, it's not life threatening. It's that I might be embarrassed. People might laugh at me. Well, if people laugh at me, let me think about them laughing with me, that I actually have taken an opportunity maybe that they haven't. And maybe their laughter is a bit nervous and they're saying, oh, I can see Kate or Michael or whoever you are taking chances that I haven't dared to do. It's a bit like the dare to dream bit. If we dare to dream and we're prepared to do something about it, then of course we're going to take risks and of course we're going to fall. But the getting up is what allows us to reach our potential.
Yeah. From my own background, I found that quite a lot, where I had to go out. I was thrown in the deep. I'm a butcher by trade. Mm-hmm. And then in about 2000, I got the opportunity to get into what you might call PR. In its own way, yes. The way I put it was, as one day I was selling meat,
yes.
The next day I was selling the company,
yes.
There was no real difference. I was selling.
That's right. That's right.
And once I had that in my head, I found it much easier to get out and just go out and talk to people. So I had to go out and talk to local residents' associations, local neighbours, local councillors, local TDs, local authorities, you name it. And it was all about confidence. If I walked in and I was confident in myself, they were confident that I knew what I was talking about. Although I have to say, most of the time, inside, the butterflies were going like nobody's business.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, and funny enough, actually, when I hear that about the butterflies, what you need to do is use all of the wings belong to those butterflies to help you fly. And that's what gives you the confidence. One of my pet hates, I suppose, is where a speaker comes out and they, so it could be a workshop, it could be a training, it could be with a big audience, and they say, tell the audience, I'm nervous. It immediately makes the audience nervous, you know, so never mind how you're feeling, never let your audience, whoever they are, know that. So as you were a butcher, you weren't just selling meat, you were selling lifestyle, you were selling nutrition, you were selling an interaction with the customers who came into you. So it was bigger, wasn't it, than just meat?
It was. And what springs to mind is that word, the C word that you used, confidence.
Absolutely.
I was selling confidence. I suppose that's what retail or any type of selling is. It's not so much about the product, it's about selling the confidence.
That's it. That's it. That's it. And I suppose what I would say is, it's up to each one of us to sell it to ourselves. And sometimes that's what's missing, is me being able to literally talk to myself and say, yes, you can do this. This might be the first time, it mightn't have gone well the last time, but you can absolutely do this. You can nail this.
Well, And the listeners are going to be able to tell you, I talk about golf the whole time. I took up golf only last June, and I'm taken away with it. I'm big into it.
And are you good?
No, absolutely dreadful.
Okay.
And happy to be dreadful.
But enjoy it.
I love it. Love it. I love a good walk. Yeah. But taking a shot or a stroke in golf, the more you think about it, the more you ponder it, the more you want it, the more you put into it, the less you get out of it.
That's right. That's right. Because you are thinking about every step of the way. So when we take a walk, you talked about, I love a good walk. When we take a walk, we don't think about, how am I walking? What is it that puts one step, one foot in front of another? And that's exactly the same thing with the golf. If you're thinking about what's my swing like, what's my stance like, all of that, set it up. But then your focus is either on the fairway, or it's on the green, or it's on the hole that's out there in front of you. And that's what makes the difference. So you take the emphasis from yourself, and you take that outside yourself and you put it to what you actually want to achieve. So when you're thinking about the fairway and where on the fairway, right, you're planning for that ball to hit. One of the things that happens is people say, I want to avoid the trees. Well, now, psychologically, all I have in my head are the trees. And where's the ball going to go? The trees. So you literally ignore the trees and you say, I'm going to hit the fairway. And that's what makes the difference. So trees aren't in your head at all. I'm hitting the fairway, or this putt is the one that makes, you know, me the winner on this hole. And it's one, literally one shot at a time.
Well, believe it or not, and this is my evil nature, I was out last Saturday. We were up in Deer Park, myself and three buddies.
Yes.
And a good friend of mine who works in the HSC, Stephen McGrath, and he works actually in the press office. Okay. in the HSC. And he was there. He was walked up. He was going to tee off. And I said to him, Stephen, just be careful of those trees on your right. Where did the ball go?
Exactly.
Yeah. No, I did it on purpose. I knew exactly what, yes, I was going to do. It's like, it's, I'd heard it previously from a sports psychologist. And he was talking about that when you walk up and you're going to tee off, if there's water in front of you,
yeah,
don't be thinking about that water. No. Because if you're thinking about the water and thinking, I mustn't put it in the water, that's what you're going to do. Mm-hmm. And that analogy, I think you're quite right, goes out into life as well.
Yes, yes.
Don't be focusing on the negatives, because if you focus on the negatives,
yeah,
that's what's going
to
happen.
Well, it's a bit like when people go to an interview, let's say, for an interview for a job. What you need to look at is, what's the job? Can I do it? Can I see myself do it? And once I can see myself do whatever that job is, the probability is I will do so much better at the interview. Whereas if I'm thinking, oh, there's competition here, there are five other people in for this job, I'll never get it, then that's what will come through to the interview board, to the interview panel. So it's that you look at what it is you want, and that's where your focus is. Your mind doesn't hear the negatives. It only, so if it's like, I don't want literally the trees, then your subconscious doesn't hear I don't want. All it hears are the trees.
Well, funny you should say that. I was just thinking of the civil service.
Yes.
The civil service interview process works around competencies.
That's right. Yeah.
And a lot of the semi-states do that, do the exact same.
Yeah. And some of the big private companies do also.
Now, when I first went to do those, and they kind of frightened me a bit, because it was outside my realm and so forth. But the more I thought about it, the more it gave you the opportunity to look at what you've done in your whole life, mm-hmm, and have it set out in front of you, you know, what you've done and how you dealt with certain situations.
That's exactly.
And you can embellish them a little bit, you know, as long as you don't go overboard and outright lie, but you can embellish some of your achievements.
Well, my experience is, and I do a lot of work with the public sector, and specifically around competencies. Oftentimes, we don't recognise the experience that we've gained. We sort of take things for granted. If we do something every day, we take it for granted. And then when somebody asks us a question at an interview, let me give you an example. Recently, a client of mine was asked at interview, tell me about the greatest risk that you've taken. And this person actually takes risks almost every day, in that she will make decisions that are a bit different, that will challenge the status quo, will challenge the way people think. she couldn't think of a risk because what she when she heard the word risk within the interview, she thought that's flying an aeroplane or parachute jumping, rather than no, challenging the status quo and challenging the way people think, that's actually taking a risk because it was pushing her outside her comfort zone. There are no secrets with competencies. I think that's the brilliant thing. If you go onto the Public Appointment Service website, they explain everything for every single level within the public sector. So whether it's going for clerical officer or a young guard or whatever level, all the way up to Secretary General of a department. The competencies are very clear. What the board is looking for is very clear. And so what your responsibility is to match your experience with what they're looking for. Now, you need to be able to tell the experience. And I talk a lot about experience, not examples. Because oftentimes what we do is we take an example of our work and we, you use the word embellish. I talk about tying a red ribbon over it, you know, box it up, if you like a present, rather than go back into it. Feel how uncomfortable it was sometimes. So when I, as a member of an interview board, ask you how many other people were on that team, you can immediately tell me there were five other people on that team. I was the lead, or I was the scribe, or I was the person who asked the questions, and this is what other people did. Whereas if you're looking at an example and you're not back in the experience, it's quite difficult to then answer that question because you're trying to remember, okay, which experience am I talking about? Which example am I talking about? So the more you can go back into real experiences, the better. And in preparing for an interview, that's really what you should do, is do what I call a brain dump of all of the experiences that you've had over the past year, let's say. And when you look at the competencies for each of what they call the indicators, really clearly written out, ask yourself, when have I done that? What were the circumstances? How did I do it? And then either put it into your application form, or if your application is in and you've been shortlisted, put it into your interview.
The one thing I always found, and I keep talking about myself, but I suppose I'm the only one who knows my own experiences, and true, I don't know other people's experiences. But what I always felt, and it's to my own detriment, it was, but I would be quite a plain speaker.
Yes.
In that I say what I mean, not so much I say what I mean, but I put things in plain English.
Yeah.
And I find that particularly in the sphere of, we say, personnel people or HR people, they have a tendency to wish to put it in their own speak, as you might say. And I find that quite difficult to interpret. And I said, well, what are they trying to say here? What are they trying to ask me? Because I can see so many different interpretations of that.
So, well, the first thing is you're better off to be a plain speaker. I say to people all the time, no buzzwords, because if everybody used the buzzwords, then all we get are a clone of each other. So continue to go in there and do the plain speaking. The way to handle that at an interview, I suggest, is that you take what you think they're asking and repeat it back. So what I'm going to answer almost is, and you give your interpretation of the question. More often than not, they will say yes. And they know, and you know what you're answering. If they want something different, they will say it to you in a different way. But you're taking some responsibility around that interview. Like, if you think about it, there are 2, 3, 4 people in that room. Everybody has the same reason for being there, and that is to get the best person for the role. Your job is to make sure that you're the one. So it's not their interview, it's your interview. And oftentimes, and that maybe is some of the confidence, but it is around, make sure that you own that room. Don't be cocky about it. Don't be overly sort of, it's all about me. certainly be aware of what they're looking for. But you should know, there should be no surprises about what the job is, what the role is, where it fits within the organisation. There should be no surprises for you going into that interview.
Well, you know, you've hit a note there that I've been told a lot of times throughout my life, was that about interviews, we all think the interview is about the employer or the person on the interview panel, and it's not. It's about you. It's your opportunity to sell yourself.
Yeah, and to tell your experience. Yes. That's really the key. It is absolutely your opportunity to tell your experience. And again, if you don't tell them, they don't know. They can't assume anything about you. So I often say to people when I'm interviewing them, we don't want you leaving here with an "I should have" on your shoulder. Tell them everything. You should go out of that interview exhausted, that you've given them your all.
And I should say, when we're talking about interview,
yes,
that interview can be for a job. But that interview can also be you trying to put your point of view across to somebody else.
Absolutely. In,
at a meeting.
Very, very definitely. Very definitely. But the key, the thing that brings it all together, so whether it's sport, whether it's at a meeting, whether it's going for a job, whatever it is, the thing that brings it all together is your being prepared, knowing what it is you want out of the situation that you're going into. So if you want to be on that team, make sure you've done the practice. Make sure you know what spots are available on the team. That's what gives you confidence. Do the preparation. You've no idea the number of people who come in to interviews. And at the end of the interview, they ask for information about the job. It's like, no. You should have done this preparation beforehand. Don't come in, tell us all this, and then want to know, well, how many people will be working with me? No.
Yeah,
first.
Totally. Now, we are quickly running out of time, but I'm thinking of some of the listeners maybe at home there, and they have children doing the Leaving Cert or maybe even the Inter Cert, and want to go on to become a carpenter or an electrician.
Yes.
Or something like that. Others will want to go on to university, and some will want to get out into the workplace.
Yeah.
What advice would you give to a parent of a child of just to get, not tell them how to do it, but how to get them into the right mind space?
This comes back to actually asking the questions rather than telling. I think we as parents oftentimes fall into that trap of telling because we tell from our experience. Whereas if you're asking, what are your interests? What really gives you energy? What will make you happy? And we oftentimes we don't use the word happiness when it comes to work or what we do on a day to day basis. And we put so much time into enjoying what we do outside the workplace or the study or any of those areas. So I suppose I would ask them to stop telling and feed people properly. I mean, honest to God, that oftentimes is a key. So have loads of fruit, have good music on, and just ask people or stay quiet. The most underused thing, I suppose, that we use is silence. We tend to want to fill the silence. And oftentimes as parents, silence really is golden, going back to that old song. So be silent. Your opinion in lots of ways doesn't matter. What's going on in your child's, your offspring's, your sibling's head is what matters.
Tell me, Kate, if somebody wants to get a hold of you, wants to learn more,
yes,
about your organisation, how can they do that?
Well, the website is there and it is potentialachieved.com. So, and then if they want to email me, it's support@potentialachieved.com, and we'd be delighted to talk to them.
Kate, many thanks for coming in this morning. And I'll have to say to you, we'll have to chat again, because we've only scratched a tiny bit of the surface. And indeed, it's something I'm really interested in.
Great. Pleasure meeting you, Michael.
Take care.
Thanks.